And welcome to the Glacially Musical podcast that is beer, metal, and swearing. Of course, I am Nick Cameron of Glacially Musical, joined by my good friend, a man who always pushes it forward, a man who always gives as good as he gets it, a man who always takes something off the bottom to throw up to the top. Kickback Chakas, how are we doing today, buddy?
Alrighty, how you doing?
I'm good. I am better than I've been in a long time about a lot of silly things that I'm not going to talk about. But thank you. I'm glad to see you. It's a best time of the week. It is the YouTube happy hour if you choose to celebrate, which unfortunately Keefe is not right now unless he's surprising me. Nope, no surprise. I, of course, will get to my beer of the week in a moment. If you are joining us this week, if you are looking for Slayer Part 4, I apologize. This week we have Steve Scavuzzo of the internationally famous in all five boroughs of New York City, Klaus Te Satanic, one of my absolute favorite doom bands and a returning guest of the show, and I'm glad to have him back. Here's how we're going to do this week. We have a greeting, a beer check, a vinyl check, news check, meat of the day, which is the interview with Steve Scavuzzo about his new record, 79 AE, which comes out in just a couple of weeks. My beer check for the week, my beer of the week is a celebratory beer because my beloved St. Louis City SC, whom I have loved since the beginning of their existence and I have watched many of their games, won the first leg of the Champions League, in the first CONCACAF Champions League for St. Louis City SC. So I am not drinking a Parker Pilsner as I already had one, but I am drinking a Stalipa brewed in the city for the city. And a finger fudge pour.
Very nice. We were trying to talk about the finger fudge pour at the bar last night, and somebody made fun of me. But I was like, no, eschew your fancy pours.
Oh, no. If I were there, I would yell, fight this dude.
Yeah, don't worry about the Instagram beautiful pour and worry about getting the gas not in your belly.
But you will have the Instagram beautiful pour once it rolls down. You just gotta, to quote Mitch Hedberg, I saw a wino eating grapes, and I'm like, dude, you gotta wait.
All right. Did you ever listen to Dr. Demento?
I tried many years ago, but I could just never really pick it up where we never really had it here in St. Louis to speak of, anyway.
Fair enough. I am drinking my weekly seltzer this week. It is the Liquid Death Severed Lime in the giant can. So, and I'm going to drink it at
thirst.
Murder Your Thirst with Liquid Death. And I'm going to drink it out of my Glacially Musical poured glass given to me in person by St. Nicholas.
Oh my God, that is the... I'm sorry, I talked over the pop. That is the greatest term for that glass, the poured glass. Oh my God, why didn't I think of that?
I've said it before, but I'm just going with that every time. There's the pour, perfect every time because it's not beer. Cheers.
Cheers, my friend. Good to see you again, as always. All right, I'm going to do a quick shirt check because I just can't wait. I was actually trying to get this shirt for a podcast recording we did a number of months ago. I don't remember what it was, but I finally have a Kiss Creatures of the Night t-shirt. And when I get to my news check, I'm going to reference the shirt briefly. But I got this again in Rockford in the Great American Rock Store. I question its legality. Might be a bootleg. I don't know. Look legit.
I was going to say, it looks like a very legit shirt. I like it.
The only thing I don't like is at the bottom, it says it's got that Creatures of the Night written there. And it's not even in the right font. It's unnecessary.
I mean, the Kiss is in purplish because it matches the color scheme of the album a little bit. I like it. I'm wearing a shirt I have worn before on the show. I was going to wear a new shirt today, but I'll wear it next week. And this is my Suffocation, just very killer, killer shirt.
Very cool. As we all are well aware, Keefe loves Suffo, as he calls them. I'm going to now transition on into my vinyl check this week. I got a twofer. The first one was a bargain that I had actually completely forgotten about that I got on Discogs for about $20 shipped. And apparently it took about 2 weeks for the seller to ship it. Apparently I'd had a couple of drinks while everybody was gone and I was surfing Discogs. And I ended up buying Gwar, Carnival of Chaos. You may recall our Gwar series. This one, it's Artie and the Mylar, has been played. Gorgeous bronze gold records. And it's a double record because this is a 90s album. And in the 90s, all of the Gore records, well, everybody's records, frankly, were just a little bit too long. And
fair enough. That's when they all started to come back.
Yeah, and that one was, I think I got that about $20 shipped. And the second record I got from friend of the Glacially Musical blog, Felix Martin, his last release. I'm not sure if he's really even still doing music. He's kind of transitioned into making very special custom guitars. Seems to be doing quite well. So, of course, I am happy and hopeful for Felix. He is an amazing talent. But I got his last album on vinyl, Caracas. For those who don't know, Felix is a, and just a, you know, black normal vinyl, nothing real special. It was only $20, I think $25 shipped. You can get it off of his website, felixmartin.com. That's where I got it. For people who are not familiar with Felix, he is an ambidextrous guitarist that plays double neck guitars, but he plays them simultaneously. He uses these strange looking little capo things so he can basically tap chords, so he can play a lead part and a rhythm part simultaneously, and it's an amazing thing to see.
Fair enough. You know, the more out of the box and weird we get, the better it goes for us, I think. I don't know. Do you agree with that?
I completely agree. This is an out of the box podcast, frankly. I mean, it's just kind of a little bit nuts.
Chaser is always a little bit nuts. So, are you all set with your checks? Is that it for your vinyl?
All good.
All right. So I have a 1-4. Today, still cutting through the 2023 records. This is one of the best albums of 2023. I think it was my second or third favorite album of last year. I have an interview with this band currently on my YouTube, and this is Code Orange, The Above. This is the deluxe edition. I don't know if you know that Code Orange, kind of from the very beginning, they were strictly a punchy hardcore band, and now they've become much more than that. Capable of doing any kind of music, actually. They had a post-grunge Alice in Chains type song this year come out on this record. They had straight-up hardcore metalcore. They had, like, sometimes death metal, sometimes industrial.
This that is a beautiful cover, by the way.
Yeah, their artwork. They do everything themselves. So this is the first release of the brand new... We get very few brand new metal record labels of major... hype. So this is Blue Grape Music, which should be a ring bells. That name should ring bells to fans, metal fans from the 80s and 90s. Blue Grape was the merchandising arm of Roadrunner.
Oh, I remember those in the Sepultura records and in the Slayer records.
They used to have a catalog. The catalog. And then, so it was mostly a merch company. The two guys who co-founded Roadrunner have launched a record label, Blue Grape Music. They didn't technically own that name, but they kind of just took it. Code Orange is the first signing to that label. Code Orange has been mostly, even though they were with Roadrunner, which is basically owned by Warner Brothers, they have been a mostly DIY band. So they own their own studio and HQ in Pittsburgh. They went into live streaming and learned how to do video production. They shoot their own videos. They make their own artwork for their albums. And so this is a double gatefold for a double gatefold album. It's like a very distinctive, interesting album with the flies, right? And this a very moody picture of them on the back cover with a fly or some kind of bug.
That picture looks like 1996.
It on purpose. It meant to be evocative of that. Now, this came with a poster I'm not going to unfurl because it's like 10 feet tall. It also came with this gorgeous lyric book with, again, that photo. And, like, I'm going to just try to, like, quickly leaf... show these beautiful photos and stories and lyrics and deeper things. They also do, they've done a lot of concerts, collabs, interactive, live streams. And then here's, I'm just going to show one vinyl for the sake of it. The other one is under here somewhere. But here's just one of them. It's on this clear, sort of clear-ish vinyl with a very artsy-fartsy spooge in the middle.
I love records that look like that. My Cannibal Corpse Violence Unimagined is that pattern. Of course, it's red and deeper red, and I love that pattern.
Yeah, it's just meant to be very distinctive, and I like it. And it's just like a weird piece of plastic randomly on my vinyl. But yeah, so this is a double LP. Beautiful, great record. I highly recommend that you check it out. Code Orange is awesome. And I had a really great interview with Jamie Morgan of Code Orange, basically the front person, but they're all kind of the front person. And he gave us some dap for being with them from the beginning, not just now that they're getting big. So I thought that was, you know, kind of a tender moment for me.
Very cool. Very cool. We will now transition on to news of the week. Quick bit of personal news. St. Louis is warming up. It was nearly 70 degrees today. So, of course, I purchased a ribeye steak to cook a nice steak with grill marks this weekend. It is going to be steak. It is going to be grilled zucchini and squash and some corn on the cob. Personal news. Now, we're going to get to the music news. I'm going to drop a couple of quick stories. First one is, as you are listening to this, or watching this on Friday, February 23rd, the two records are going to have dropped. Ace Frehley's 10,000 Volts. Keefe's going to put a link to the review from Ghost Cult Mag in the comments. And Mick Mars, The Other Side of Mars, also drops. I will have them both. We will discuss Ace Frehley at length in a future Chaser. Not right around the corner, but it's coming. And to jump onto the Kiss news, Vinnie Vincent has canceled his upcoming new show with new singer Faisal Smile. And with that, I have come to the conclusion that Vinnie Vincent can accomplish nothing. And Vinnie Vincent, and I am now canceling Vinnie Vincent from the Glacially Musical podcast. He will not be spoken of again. In memoriam, Vinnie Vincent.
I just don't think you're going to be able to help yourself. You're going to have to bring it back at some point. I know you.
Nope. I do not like to repeat myself. And Vinnie Vincent news is a constant repetition of itself. And being as he has closed off the portal to acquire the news, it has just gone crazy. And you know what? I would have loved to have told you in a couple of weeks that he put on an amazing show and he let Faisal sing his heart out and they did something good and records are coming. Because you know what? Anyone who's listened to the Department of Metal Antiquities knows I love a solo record. If you are remotely connected to a band I love, I will check you out. I will talk about you. I have listened to Tony Martin's solo records. Who else listening to this podcast right now has done that? Let me also say, don't do that. Really, it is not. No, don't. But I will. So, yeah, I wish I could say something great was coming. It is just not coming. So,
yeah,
I yield my time and I yield all of his time on this show.
I wanted it. As much grief as we have given the guy, there's a part of both of us where we want it to be great. He is capable of greatness. He has written some bangers. He is very talented, or he was.
He is the world's greatest sideman. You bring him in to polish your turd, and Gene Simmons goes from Charisma and She's So European to I Love It Loud and War Machine from Creatures of the Night. Note the shirt. However, you let Vinny go to his own devices, and he records the Vinnie Vincent Invasion for 2 years, re-recording every part 20 times, and refusing to play shows, and we are just at the logical end of Vinnie Vincent's musical career. Thank you for the tunes. Thank you for the giggles. I hope you have found what you're looking for.
What is this? The love that you shall find, because it's the love you can never find, because it's the love that you will always be found.
I've been keeping people out of the set. I haven't heard any tracks. Yeah. Sisyphus, goddammit!
Sisyphus Suleimanetic Jackson deterred. He is coming. They are coming back. Infectious Grooves is a week and a half away from their first show in a while.
Nerd.
In Southern California with their new lineup featuring Jay Weinberg, formerly of Slipknot, Rob Trujillo from Metallica back on bass, Dean Pleasant, Psycho Maiko, and Dave Kushner of Velvet Revolver and other LA punk and rock bands.
I just need Mike Muir in that delicious flea metallic metal metallic bass sound that it but metal by Rob Trujillo, and that's enough for me. And if that is as authentic of an Infectious Grooves lineup as I require.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Shall we quickly go through the big news of the day and the week, and then bring in our guest?
Let's do that.
Shall I lead or you?
It is yours. You take.
Oh, well, it doesn't have to be mine. So I think to the surprise of many, including like us, while we're in the midst of this Slayer series...
Timing.
Slayer has chosen to reunite, a thing that I was literally, like, yesterday would say, like, never, ever. Never,
after,
ever.
After the Kerry King news we dropped last week, I would have said, no way in hell.
Yeah, Kerry King has been on a burn the forest down, scorched earth press tour, launching his new Kerry King music project for his upcoming album. And today, out of nowhere, unbeknownst to me, I had no inkling this was happening, although I will tell you a funny quick anecdote. Slayer announced they are reuniting for two shows, just in case you've been living under a cave and didn't know. At least two shows. I suspect there's no way they're coming back for just two shows. But these two exclusive U.S. festival dates, Riot Fest in Chicago, where Slayer had played before, and Louder Than Life, a Danny Wimmer festival in Kentucky. And it is the lineup of Kerry King, Tom Araya, never thought they would share a stage ever again, Paul Bostaph, and Gary Holt. So no Lombardo, nobody else. I'm going to make a bold prediction right now. We're going to get the exact same set list they played all 2 years, 2018, 2019. I promise you. Not one change. I doubt it highly we will get a different set list.
Completely agree.
Probably the exact same stage and the same fire and the same everything.
If they bring a stage, but I am going to agree with you. If this only goes one or two shows, I will eat my new St. Louis City SC hat.
Yeah, I think it's a fair. Now I don't think they're gonna. I've already dubbed this the Pantera effect. This Slayer reunion is the result of the success already of the Pantera reunion. Now, I will tell you that I don't know, other than the Metallica tour and the off dates tour and the current tour dates Pantera has. Beyond that, I don't know that they have anything booked. But I'm going to tell you the offers are there and the money is astronomical. Whatever they're pulling in now is more than they ever made back in the day. Even if they're not selling CDs anymore and maybe the sales of albums are lower, but the tickets and the merch, through the roof, bigger than ever. Especially when you factor in Metallica. And so this Slayer thing is a complete surprise. Just last week, Kerry dropped the hammer on Tom. He's dropped the hammer. In the past, he loves Paul, but he's also insulted Paul at different times when Paul's been in and out of the band. And he loves Gary, and he won't say a crossword to Gary. Just what's your gut reaction to this news? We're both shocked, but like, what's your reaction?
I wanted Slayer to be the first band to retire on the first time to retire. And I feel like Slayer has accomplished everything Slayer can accomplish. They're not going to come back, reinvent the wheel. They're not going to come back and write better songs. The songwriting engine is gone. You know, Gary can come in and completely replicate, you know, Jeff's parts live, and it's great and it's fine. But it just would have been cool if somebody retired when they said they were gonna.
Just once, I want a band to stay retired. And I'm going to tell you, it could go badly, because we know that Tom was struggling to just finish the last tour physically. And so I think I don't want anything to happen to them. I want them to get along. They clearly stopped talking during that last tour. As you know, we talked last week about how Kerry said they walked off stage and never texted or called or anything in 4 years. It's 3 years and a quarter since Slayer retired, and now they're back. I will also say, last week, randomly, I got a call that freaked me out. I was in the middle of a band interview. I was actually interviewing Dylan Desmond of Bellwitch for his new project, his solo project, which that's coming soon. And then my phone rings, and it's the publicist of Slayer, who is a legend in heavy metal and a legend in the music industry and one of the nicest, best, wonderfulest people, and has been a supporter of Ghost Cult and myself personally for a long time. She is also the publicist of Anthrax. She is also the publicist of Pixies. Random, but true. Just called my phone. out of nowhere. I haven't talked to her in years. We email sometimes for things. Even though Slayer's been retired, you know, there's still Slayer stuff happening. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we put up a meme on our social media. We've been doing, like, you know, a meme a day or a meme every other day. I hate to say that the memes get more traction than actual breaking news like this Slayer story today. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. The occasional happy birthday. And so she was like, did you put out this saying? It was like, is it just us or do you think the Earth emoji has gone to hell since Slayer retired? Question mark. With a Slayer logo or something. And people commented, like 1,000 people commented. I think the guys in Slayer saw it. I didn't know this news was coming a week later. But this is why. Because at the very top of the press release for Slayer's comeback today was my quote. Ghost Cult Mag. She didn't link the meme, but it's my quote. Which is very gratifying. Just a tiny little bit of gratification for me. And, I mean, it's good for metal that Slayer is back. I might go to Riot Fest. I probably won't go to Louder Than Life. Ghost Cult will probably still try to cover both. But, I'm happy for metal. And some people never got to saw Slayer, apparently. But also, they said everything they have to say. They're not going to do anything new. And I hope nobody gets damaged worse or hurt or anything trying to do this thing. That's my piece.
This is the last thing I'm going to say, and we'll bring in our guest. I just hope it goes the way they want it to.
Here's one last thing. My prediction on the money. Somebody asked me what I think the money is. I happen to know that the pie of the headliner money for Riot Fest, just Riot Fest, is several million dollars split among the headliners. They had four quasi-headliners last year at the Riot Fest I went to. The Cure, Foo Fighters, the Postal Service, and the Arcade Fire. Those last two bands, not a huge fan of. Those four bands split about $3 million last year. I think Slayer is going to get upwards of $750,000 to $1 million by themselves for these two shows, each show. Just let that ruminate in your head when they start announcing other headline dates. I bet they're going to do like a smattering of dates all over the world. The money's going to be insane for them. I rest my case.
All righty, bring in Steve. And BRB, AFK, ROTOLFOL. As everybody knows, we are now joined by friend of the show, a very handsome gentleman, a man who plays the fuzz. He's got scuzz in his name, Steve Scavuto. Oh my God, Steve Scavuzzo. I'm verklempt. Talk amongst yourselves, all the business of Klaus Tay Satanic. Man, I screwed the pooch on that one. I'm sorry.
All right. I've had my name massacred in far worse ways than that, that's for sure. Hola, Keith.
Hey, man, nice to see you. You know, I'm from New York originally. I've seen the band before. I'm a fan. And when you have a brutal name, you just go by a nickname, Keefe. So it's like Madonna, Prince, MJ, Keefe. It's fine.
Yeah, if I can remember Keith, I'm way ahead of the game for sure.
I refuse to remember Keefe. That's why I give him a new name every week. That's kind of what I do here. And, you know, thank you very much for joining us, of course. Let's see. I guess, should we ask, is there anything coming up for Klaus Tay Satanic that anybody would need to know about? Like maybe some news I dropped about 4 weeks ago.
Trying to think of anything exciting. I know we're, anyone on the East Coast, we're doing a show. We're supposed to be doing a show with Geezer on 420, appropriate date. I think they're putting together something in Connecticut. We'll make announcements when we get something to share on socials, but that's probably the one and only time to see us, unless Europe in May. That's probably what's coming down the pike next.
So you're playing in Connecticut, you're playing in Europe. Have you ever heard of flyover country? I'm just asking the question.
We'd love to make it out to the West Coast. I don't know about St. Louis, but I'm for sure where Keith is in San Francisco, and I'm pretty sure that we're going to have to make an effort to make it out there as well too.
I don't
if you play San Francisco and I have enough time, I have many reasons to go out there and convince the family to go.
I was going to say, I don't think they're doing a San Francisco Heavy Psych Sounds Fest this year, but I saw Geezer last year at Heavy Psych Sounds Fest San Francisco, literally 10, 15 blocks from my house at the Parkside, which is a lot of fun. And are you playing Desert Fest in Europe? Is that what you guys are doing?
Yeah, we're going to be in London on May 17th for Desert Fest, and then we're putting together a couple of weeks after that, just so we can, you know, feel like we've justified the ride over. So maybe a week in the UK and then a week in Europe and then back home.
Oh, much love. Much love to the Desert Fest fam. We cover Desert Fest London. We will probably be there again this year. Nice. And much love to Chris and Sarika and their entire team. They're fantastic people. They put on fantastic festivals in Belgium, New York City, London, other places. So that's wonderful, man. I'm glad.
Yeah. Well, we did Desert Fest New York in September, and it was a joy. Really enjoyed it. Beautiful day and played outside, and really everything came together.
A good friend of mine told me once that outdoor rock sucks. Do you feel the same way, or how do you feel about that?
It's like anything. It depends on the weather, you know? I mean, if it's the temperature's right and it's the right type of day. I know that they set up the space that that they had it this year is a place called the Knockdown Center, which does not sound very glamorous, and it's the middle of Queens, which is equally unglamorous. But it had a real, the place they set it up was a real industrial feel. So the stage was cool. And then as far as from the stage looking out, your main view was, besides the audience, was a bar about the length of a football field, which I always find encouraging. And then above that, train tracks. So occasionally freight trains would go by. And it sounds annoying, but
literal freight trains or like model trains?
Real trains. Real freight trains.
Were they going like, was it like mainline speed? So they'd like whip through, or did they like go through like it was a crossing?
Kind of going slow.
No trains in New York whip through, Nicholas. Like, no trains whip.
I don't know. I haven't watched trains up there.
Yeah. Well, you kind of forget that, like, you know, back in the day, you know, there was train tracks all over, you know, New York City. Not necessarily as much in Manhattan, but certainly through Brooklyn and Queens, you know, aside from the subway thing, they had light rail trains that and freight trains that would run through. And that's how things got around. So still occasionally you can still see one or two rolling through.
The way they built St. Louis is there are only two railroad cross. I mean, there's trains that go all over the city, but there are only two crossings. All the rest of it snakes around and goes under and over. And unfortunately, one of those crossings is on my way home from work.
Oh,
that's pretty interesting. I'm from the Boogie Down Bronx originally, and I lived in Brooklyn for 5 years before I left, as Nick is tired of hearing me reference Brooklyn
and Boston.
Bronx. And I lived in Boston for 10, 11 years, so he's tired of hearing all about this. But right before I came along, the Bronx had an entire additional elevated train line that ran through the South Bronx, through Webster Avenue, through literally the Bronx's burning neighborhoods. And there's still remnants of those old. We don't have the train line anymore. It was replaced by subways on one hand and bus lines on another. But there's still like some of these gigantic, you know, outboard other stations that had multiple train lines. And now they only have a couple. So it's very fascinating stuff. New York City, always an interesting time when it comes to public transportation. The wild train map that looks like spaghetti. Did you ever play the Market Hotel, Steve? Because that was also, I lived in Bushwick, and the Market Hotel, which is also like right on the border of where Ridgewood and Bushwick meet, where the Knockdown Center is, right, in Queens. And they have literally, like, it was a reconfigured paper factory that turned into a multi-use venue for bands. And the train wraps around the building, like hugs the building. And literally the bands will be playing. Like the very last show I saw there before the Demi Lovato was Today is the Day and The Obsessed. Great show. Nice. And like, you know, Today is the Day, literally like one of the most thunderous bands ever. Nick knows I checked one of the albums a while back, one of the newish reissues, and like they're like thunderous, and then the train is like hugging around the building. You see the train pass through the big bay windows of the old factory. So pretty cool stuff.
If I may jump in briefly, if anybody is bored of the train talk thinking it's not metal, dude, trains are totally metal. Like literally, it's electric metal. It's basically Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
Word to
Well,
the
it's like I
birds.
said, the place is pretty industrial, and it kind of reminds you a little bit about the, different places and different vibes. And we've actually just had St. Vitus close temporarily, I think, in this last week or so. That was in the news. So any place that's, favorable to metal and harder stuff as well too is usually encouraged. And so we'll take it when we can get it.
Well said. I'm still mourning the loss of CBGBs and Roseland, and I never got over them. So if we lose St. Vitus, it's going to be a huge hole in the scene, in the world. I think we were really, everybody reported the story. Ours went pretty viral. I think we were the only website that really talked about the importance of St. Vitus. I was back east for a visit on the East Coast last fall, as people know, and then I also separately visited Nicholas in November in St. Louis, my first time there. And people are much nicer in St. Louis than they are in New York, by the way.
We
As
are
I
very, I mean, it's very passive aggressively nice, just for the
I'm
record.
shocked. Wait a minute. Hold on. That's true.
I don't know. I felt like they were naturally nice,
The
but I could be wrong.
Midwest is a very laid back, kind of nice place. We do shoot each other a lot quickly, but as long as nobody pulls a gun, it's usually going to be okay. And we'll smile a very condescending smile. But people that aren't from here don't realize how condescending it is. Like, you say, "How's it going?" "Oh, yeah, no, that means fuck you."
Well, now I've got to visit. Now I'm getting on a bus tomorrow, and I'm coming.
I would suggest a plane, not a bus, because that's a look. I have driven from St. Louis to New York City. It took 3 days.
Oh,
You do, I mean, you don't want to do the Dave Mustaine, the Greyhound bus west. I wouldn't even take an Amtrak. I took an Amtrak for 12 hours once, and that was kind of terrible, except for the parts where I was moving. The 8 hour layover in Chicago was a little excessive, it seemed like. But I mean, you can fly here on Southwest pretty cheaply. I don't know if Southwest goes out there. The last time I was in New York, it was an accident, and I had to take a prop plane to go to Philadelphia. It was a whole day, and that was the first prop plane I had ever been on, and it had not occurred to me that they could be very loud,
and
which it
scary.
was.
If
Yes, and
you're
I had
afraid
to
of flying,
walk.
forget it.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm not a great flyer. I'm a great train rider because it's dignified. I can get up, I can go pee, I can get a beer. It's fine. Nobody's like sweating on me. I got free Wi-Fi. I can plug my phone in. It only costs $20 to go to Chicago. It's awesome. Then I got on this prop plane, and I'm like walking down the tarmac, and I'm like, I've never done this. I'm not I've probably flown about 50 or 60 times. I'm not like the biggest well-traveled person in the world, but I thought to myself, I've never walked on the tarmac. What are we doing here? Well, because the prop plane is only so high and the jetway is way above it. And then that's when things get concerning. And then you see the wood, I it was wooden propellers, and I'm like, "Oh, what wait, hang on. What did I do here?"
Just walking up and down a ramp to get on a plane feels archaic. It's like, what the hell?
Nick regretted all his choices. Let's ask you some questions about your band. I love all this travel talk, though. It's pretty fun. And I'm sure you have some fun travel stories too. We know, Nick and I, we love your band. Give us, for those our fans that may not be familiar with your band, just give us like the 1 minute history of the band. New music coming soon. I'm thankful to get, I know you sent stuff along. I'm thankful to get pitched by PR, Richard Jones, Sheltered Life, I think, has you guys in Europe. And we're, because we started in Europe to cover Roadburn and Desert Fest and other things that are not around anymore, like All Tomorrow's Parties and Incubate Fest, I'm still on a lot of European press lists who I feel like your band is equally known in Europe to here. But tell us a little bit, like, what's the, if someone has never heard you before, what should they, what would be the album to start with or the song to start with? What's a comparable? What's your journey look like in brief?
Well, I usually try to warn people, number one, that it's instrumental, and that usually takes people a little off guard. It's like, oh, you do not have a singer. Yes, we do not have a singer. Then I started in with, well, it's doom metal. And then if you need to explain doom metal, you basically go, oh, it's Black Sabbath without Ozzy. And then you try to go back to, you know, we've been around since 2014, I would say, was the first album that came out. And we've pretty much put out an album every year since then. So I would probably add that we're fairly productive as bands go, as far as getting records out and recording and putting things out. But they're long songs, they're heavy, but they also have a mixture of dynamics. And anyway, we try to say that it's probably a little more challenging than most people are used to, but it's not overwhelmingly challenging, and you can get past the whole instrumental thing. If you really like music and you know you're looking for something maybe just a little different than what you've heard before, metal or otherwise.
I love that description. And if I could, I thank you very much for sending me an advanced copy of the new record, 79 AE. And if I could quickly go through a track by track review of it, I would greatly appreciate that. The first track, it is a fairly long song. There's a lot of, as you would have put it, dynamic. I would put a lot of esoteric goodness to it. It builds, it goes, it comes up, it crashes down. And the last track is the exact same kind of concept. Love the record.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know if you caught that, but I was trying to reference a joke you made to me where you'd played a show and the drummer goes, "That was our first song. And here's our last one."
That was the one and only time he told a joke that was actually funny that I still laugh.
He's a drummer. We all tolerate drummers.
Oh, yeah. And especially ones with microphones. You got to be extra patient. But so, yeah, it is. And I guess we try to describe it as cinematic, you know, and if you're a music person, and if you're a metal music person, you can find a lot of bands that or I wouldn't say a lot, but some bands that are similar to what we do. It's not like we originated the concept of instrumental music or long song.
I'm just going to say Beethoven totally ripped you off.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the whole classical thing, if you really want to go, you know, do the deepest dive. But there's been bands before and there will be bands after that are doing, you know, this kind of the same concept, both in metal, post-metal, post-rock, you know, to bring it home to a little more like maybe what your listeners are more accustomed to. So it's not that foreign a concept, but it does require maybe a little bit more, I don't know if patience is the word. People tend to enjoy listening to it while they're either doing laundry or going on long car trips. Because I guess, you know, attention spans can be difficult sometimes. And it's just like, okay, here's a good way of like, of consuming it to some extent. Now this record is a little different than the ones that we did before, because essentially there's a more of a backstory about how it came out, and it was supposed to be originally a score to a film that has yet to be made. But other than that, a lot of our records, I wouldn't say they're necessarily similar, but the concepts are kind of there. So I could suggest some albums, but you really can't go wrong with any. They're all fucking brilliant.
So what you're saying is you did Klaus Satanic's version of Kiss's Music from the Elder. You made the cinematic the soundtrack to the film that definitely will be made.
Well, you know, it's an interesting example, because if I'm going to go back and listen to a Kiss record, if I'm going to just like, I want to be entertained, or I just wanted something, you know, easy to digest and enjoy, I'll go to Alive. If I want to like think a little deeper about what the community is talking about in relation to the Kiss, and I want to stay away from merchandising or all the other crap that goes along with it, I'd go to the Music from the Elder, because it's like, wait a minute, this is a record that people talk about. It's deeper than your regular Kiss album. It's got more going on. I don't know if I'd necessarily, I mean, I certainly would say it's different, but I would then say, okay, this is a record I want to investigate more, for good or for ill. And I kind of like that idea of like, of having an album that you can go to that it's going to take a little bit more attention to go to and pay attention and decide for yourself, hey, are people just, the people who hate it, is it really that bad? The people that love it, is it really that good? And where do I stand on it?
I am very much on record for loving terrible concept records. Terrible concept records is my kink. So yes, I did buy an original pressing of Kilroy Was Here 2 weeks ago to replace my modern pressing. Yes, I did buy a 1981 pressing, English UK pressing, that I haven't gotten yet because it's in England. It's going to be mailed to me later, of Music from the Elder. Yes, I love The Wall. Every Roger Waters stupid crap that he has done since then, I love it. As for Music from the Elder, it's a rough listen, because for every moment that it is the most brilliant music Kiss ever released, it's also got Dark Light, right, and it's also got Just a Boy, and it's also got Mr. Blackwell. And unfortunately, I just gave you half the record, which is terrible.
But you know, but to get there, to get to the point of listening through it and examining it and just like, you know, picking out the elements that are excellent and the elements that are lacking thereof, you know, it just, to me, it kind of just elevates that album to something that demands more consideration. And I like the idea of having a record that takes a little bit more effort, and that kind of circles back to, in a sense, what kind of what we're doing. And I guess instrumental as a whole, it's like you need, if you really, you can get some riffs that are catchy and grab them right away. But if you really want to understand it a little bit more, it you've got to spend a little more time, but I think it's worthwhile.
Right.
And that's how we sum up our band.
That is one of the greatest descriptions and runarounds back to self that I've ever heard. Thank you for that. I just want to touch on one thing that you said about Music from the Elder, and then I will go back to you. Music from the Elder is the only Kiss record where we only talk about music. Right. That's all it is. It is just the music. So love it or hate it, it is what it is. And that's an amazing moment in the history of that band. And when I listen to, because I listened to 79 AE for the first time today, normally when I pre-order a record, because I did pre-order it last month on vinyl, some splatter, I don't remember which one. You have so many amazing variants, and I'm only buying one. That's all I do. I only buy one, unless I need to replace the pressing, like Kiss Me, you know, Music from the Elder. But I loved the build of this record, and all of your records have a build, but I felt like there was a tenderness to this one that the previous records didn't have. Am I remembering wrong, or was that a conscious choice?
Well, I mean, without going into all the history, which I could, but without going into all of it, I think everyone, any band that puts out a new record says, we think this is our best record. This is like, it's light years better than the last one.
If it's not the best record, why would anybody buy it? So of course, every record is the best record. Saint Anger was the best record until 2 weeks after it came out.
Yeah, or at least they think that's the case. So I try to be a little bit more subjective and realize that, you know, people's opinions differ. But I will say two things. Number one, the sound quality of the recording itself, the studio we worked at and the engineer we worked with, to our ears, is the best sounding Cloud Stay Satanic record sonically. As far as the music itself goes, this was, I won't say it's the first record, but we've been building over time to a situation where the band is working more together in both the writing and the arranging of the music, you know, more of a contribution. So we've always had everyone contributing to one extent or another over the course of the band with the music. But on this record in particular, there was more of a conscious effort for everyone to write and to really work hard on the arrangements together as a band in formulating things. So those two elements, I think, come across maybe with what you're hearing. They certainly do with us when we listen to it. And there's no harsher critic than the actual band itself, because we've heard this record 1,001 times over and over again. And I still enjoy listening to it from beginning to end. I can find moments in other records that I'll pick apart and be like, okay, well, I would have done this differently. But this record, for sure, I listened to it from start to finish. And I'm like, okay, there's nothing I would change. I really like where it's going. And maybe we've just gotten good at trying to create what we've had in our minds, you know? And the score to the film is another side story, and I think that adds to it as well.
Nice work. Cool. I think what I was going to jump in and say is, for me, and again, having been a fan and listened to all the previous things, not knowing that this was a soundtrack to something that doesn't exist, I would say that what I did find on this record that I think has existed before for the band but has really come to the fore is there's some really cool atmospheric stuff in Reclamation, particularly like more than the halfway point through. There's like a very, very cool, classy, subtle part in there that I think, you know, takes kind of the grip of a veteran band that knows how to write together. Because like the urgency part to get like, oh, here's a cool riff and just kill it to death with a riff salad and riff sauce. And here's where you got like everybody collectively steps back and just kind of lets it lurk like almost the villain cue in a movie, the musical cue of a villain. And, you know, what I was going to say for fans, if instrumental doom and psychedelic rock and doom metal sounds off-putting to you, I think of some of the best bands today, like Sleep and related Sleep projects like Ohm, Elder, who is currently on tour with Tool, you know, countless other bands that I deeply love, Mana Lord. I think fans of those bands would really love your band, even if you guys are not exactly a one-to-one and apples-to-apples for any of those.
Right. Well, I mean, we've taken a lot of influence from all those bands. And like I said, there's plenty of bands out there that's, you know, doing things that are similar to us and stuff that we would like to do. Pelican, Bong Ripper, which is more extreme, Russian Circles, and Resin from Chicago. Why my four favorite bands are all from Chicago. I mean, there needs to be a story about that, too. I can't figure out why that is. I've been to Chicago maybe two times in my entire life. But those four bands are my current favorite bands of all time. And they all happen to be from Chicago, making somewhat similar music, you know, and there's something about them that, but yeah.
If you live in Chicago, I can tell you it's very windy and smelly. The lakes, Lake Michigan smells bad. The Chicago River smells bad. And I'm not just saying that because I hate you, Chicago. Well, I hate your sports teams. I actually love the city. Great city. But I hate all the sports teams because I have to.
I mean, have you smelled New Jersey lately? Like, bro.
No.
Like,
New Jersey? No, I have not.
I was
been
there in the summer. It was horrid.
I have not been to New Jersey since 1992. I'm okay with that. I don't really wake up I am knee deep in my Sopranos era. I'm now even wearing an Adidas track jacket. And I bought Michael Imperioli's record.
Oh, no, man.
It's actually, if you like indie garage psychedelic rock, it's actually pretty damn good.
Really? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, it's called Zopa.
Then I will not mock until I've tried it. I've been
listening to the Talking Sopranos podcast, and he's been hyping it. And I'm like, well, I don't know, man. I got $20. I'll throw it at you. I mean, you seem like you have enough money, but whatever.
Well, I don't know if the Sopranos New Jersey would be similar to the Pelican or Russian Circle Chicago. I mean, I don't know enough about the city. You know, I just think it's kind of odd that there certainly tends to be in it, you know.
It's like if you listen to music from Winnipeg, it all feels like you're suffocating because snow is going down your esophagus. So if you listen to music from Chicago, they're all smelling the same stinkiness and the same awfulness and the same failure of the Cubs and the White Sox.
Didn't the Cubs win the World Series or did they lose again?
That was forever ago.
That was 2 years ago, man. Like, it's not forever ago.
Hang on, wait, the Cubs won it 2 years ago? Really?
Yeah, I'm surprised the Earth didn't unmake itself when they
won it. No, that was like 8 or 9 years ago that they won it.
No, sir. No, sir.
They won it in 2022.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm bringing forth the internet on this one. Talk amongst yourselves.
Well, whatever, man. Mute yourself if you're going to clackety-clack a thing. Anyhow, let's keep it with Steve. Like, more important than your hatred of Chicago sports. I was in Chicago, and I had a wonderful time, and everybody was nice. It was clean. I didn't smell anything foul. It was much cleaner than New York, where I'm from and I love. Much cleaner than San Francisco, which is, you know, we love it.
Astros.
A wreck. Right. Whatever. They cheated anyway.
They did. I hate them too.
Yeah, so whatever. Anywho, you know, I like that you guys, you know, you don't, you know, you have to, I always say about metal, especially different forms of underground genres of metal, subgenres, you have to want it. You have to want to be there. You don't just show up one day and you like this music. Like, you know, we were talking about the Slayer reunion news today in our news section here earlier, because it's just going to stop the world that these guys who hate each other are getting back together to play. But
oh, Slayer's getting back together?
Oh, you didn't know? Yeah. Slayer is playing two festivals this year. Tom Carey, Gary Holt on guitar, lead guitar, and Paul Bostaph. And I'm baffled because, like, just last week, Carey was, like, talking mess on these guys. And especially Tom. And but, I, like I said, you got to want to be here. So for you making that music, you know that your fans want, like, when they're in the audience, they're there for you usually, right. You know?
Well, you know, and I think, you know, I guess the easiest way to say it is that we really enjoy the way what we're doing. And we started out that way, and we're still this way because we really enjoy the concept. We enjoy and we've never really entertained the idea of having a singer per se. And even though some of our records have some shorter songs, you know, for the most part, we've actually found the longer format to be easier and more enjoyable to play. In the beginning, you don't get instant instrumental doom for success and money and accolades, because
even just regular doom.
Yeah. I mean, although I will say, though, when I started getting back into metal, I was pleased by the fact that there seemed to be in the community the concept of the longevity of a band being rewarded by its audience rather than discarded in other genres of music as being too old. I really felt like, you know, there were fans of bands that had been around forever, and the more time you spent in the scene was rewarded by people rather than, you know, like other forms of pop music and whatever, where you're deemed too old or whatever, or kind of out of touch with anything. That was one element I thought super supportive of that. So it was definitely, that element was appealing to us in as far as making that type of music. But you know, you got to love the music, period. And there just didn't seem to be, there's no shortcut at all at this point for us or for anyone really in metal. If you write catchy songs, you can become popular. If you've got a singer, you can probably become a lot more popular, but it's not a road that we're gonna like, that we really think about it at all as far as that goes. We're kind of happy with our niche.
I can remember going to Bernard's Pub on Laclede's Landing with a buddy of mine who was booking a show. And he's the booker, and this was a place that literally would book anyone. They booked my bands several times. They would book our band before we even had enough songs written for a set. We did cancel that show, and he's like, "Oh yeah, the band playing right now, they're instrumental jazz, so you know, there's not a lot of chicks here tonight." And that's basically, I mean, instrumental music of any sort. Unless it's classical music, unless you're going down to the symphony, it's looked down on as, don't you have anything to say? Because your average music listener, in my humble opinion, I speak for no one but Nick, kind of sucks a little bit and is not really willing to dig deep and hear what's going on. They need to be spoon-fed if you look at pop music in America today, the lyrics are not metaphorical. You don't have to dig. Basically, it's like watching a video with the words at the bottom. Here is the meaning. It's like an episode of Star Trek where they give you all these great themes, and at the end, what Data or Spock just tells you the whole theme. This is what you should have learned. And that's what makes instrumental music hard for most American listeners, because you actually have to listen. You have to hear it. My favorite Steve Vai record is The Story of Light, which was his 2014 record. He actually put a lot of effort into it, and you can hear the story even though most of the songs have no lyrics. And that's what I love about your about Klaus Day Satanic is I can feel the journey. And it's as long as The Hobbit, except way more interesting.
Well, thank you.
I also bought my wife the extended cut of The Hobbit, and I regret that.
That's your cross to bear.
Yes, it
But
is.
well, and maybe this record, might sound more pleasing because maybe we're just getting better at what we're doing. That's the other thing as well too. You play together for a while, and I will say too that the record before 79 AE is was Tales of Demonic Possession. It was a double album for 20 plus minute songs. And we went into that. It was a pandemic record where we really went in with so many ideas and so many thoughts, and we put them all down there. And I think it's a really great record, but there's a lot going on in each song, and that's kind of the way we wanted to have it. But I think when we came out of it, and we were thinking about what we wanted to do next, and this opportunity for the score came along. They both kind of came together as a way of trying to do what we do, but maybe in a slightly more minimalist fashion. Same peaks and valleys, but maybe quality, not quantity. Not that we felt like the previous ones were lacking in quality, but cutting down maybe on the number of tracks. And really trying to focus in and make some of the quieter sections a little more quiet and a little more thoughtful, and the heavier sections a little more simpler but also heavy. So, that that could have something to do with it. It really made sense for what a score would be for a movie, and it made sense for where we were at that time and what we wanted to record.
So I guess it's appropriate to say this record is very similar to, say, Pink Floyd's More, where that record is actually probably about 70% instrumental.
Right.
And you can feel, Keefe's making faces. You can feel the cinematography of the album. I will say 79 AE is a great record. It is probably, based on my cursory listen, you got to give me about 20 to 30 more to really know. But I would say it's probably my favorite since Evil Eye, which has still been my favorite from the beginning. As we are winding down on time and we are reaching the end of the evening, and I thank you very much for joining us. Two things. If you find another one of those Zippos that you guys put on Bandcamp about 2 years ago, I'm sorry, I was drunk when I bought it and I bought the wrong one. So if you could send me one, I would appreciate that. And two, what are all your links, your socials? Where can people get this record? And are there any other formats besides kick-ass vinyl and digital?
So what we send people mainly to if you're in the US to Bandcamp where you can get vinyl. There's still some vinyl left of the record. There are CDs of the record. We haven't gotten to 8-track yet, and we'd like to do a cassette version of it at one point, but it's not there yet. If you are in Europe and you want to save a little bit on shipping, you can buy it directly from the label Majestic Mountain Records. They've got a few copies left, although they're running low. And there's also a distributor called ClearSpot in Europe as well too, again to save on shipping. That's vinyl and CD. Socials, you'll find us everywhere. If you're a Facebook person, you'll find us on Facebook. Instagram is our main, I guess, source. And we're, we even do
What's your
occasionally
MySpace page?
TikTok. I'm sorry?
What's your MySpace page?
Let's see. I think there's one still floating out there somewhere. I'm scared to look for it. I'm actually afraid of what I will find. It's like a Planet of the Apes
If
thing.
you're
You're going to
still
be
up,
scared when you actually figure
damn yous all to hell.
out.
Reverb Nation. If you have
Yeah.
Reverb Nation, definitely get rid of that guy. But or Bandzoogle is another one. I still don't know why people
I don't
have
even
them.
know what that is.
Oh, thank God. Thank God. Thanks, Satan. Steve, we really, we don't have a lot of guests on. We intermittently have these chaser episodes for our regular drink episodes, and I'm really glad you came on with us. Killer band, really, obviously my hometown people, so I'm always rooting a little extra harder for y'all. But go out to Europe and show them how it's done, and have a great time and be safe. And, you know, we look forward to more of these from you. And maybe we'll get that. You know, maybe one of these other bands will pick you up and, you know, bring you out here or bring you down to Nick. That would be really swell.
Well, and thank just you let me say, live record. Where is it?
The light. It's actually coming.
Nailed well, it.
The Christmas vinyl is coming in November, and then we're actually working on a live record now.
Beautiful.
Ask and you shall receive.
I am also well versed that I love live records. So like, thank you.
All right.
All righty. Whose turn is it to take us out this week?
I think it's me.
You go ahead.
All right. Steve, once again, thank you so much. We really appreciate you. For those listening, tune in next week for episode 4 of our series on Slayer, Raining Blood, and hopefully the hype of the new Slayer reunion will buoy our podcast numbers. So if you're listening and this is your first time here, thanks. Like and subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review in all the places that have podcasts. Watch this on YouTube. Make fun of us. It's cool. We can take it, I think. As usual, I am Ghost Cult Keefe of GhostCultMag.com, a very fine establishment for music news, interviews, and reviews. You know Nick can be found everywhere, Glacially_musical, @GlaciallyMusical, Nick_no_C, and find us on all the things. We'll link all of Steve's stuff in the description, too, so you can find his band. And anything else Steve wants us to share for him, we'd be happy to. As I always like to say, you have been listening to the Glacially Musical Podcast. It does not play in Peoria, but Steve, let us know if you have played in Peoria, Illinois.
That's no. A no.
Negatory on that. Take care, y'all.
All right, take care, guys.